And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of your favorite celebrities. This is Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. Welcome to another episode of Gold Mines. Oh, shit. Because you know what I'm about to say? I'm about to ask you, what do we do here? And this is when you guys all say it at the same time. We get inside the minds of amazing individuals. And today, well, today will be no different. Not only is this an amazing individual, but this is someone that I have one of those stories about that have stayed. I guess you could say it's acted as a testament to not only myself, my career, but like the organization, the structure, like the way that things kind of fell in place. This person is attached to one of the biggest pieces to the puzzle. It's one of the biggest moments of just realization, association. It kind of made me understand what it was to really be a comic and be a comics comic. And to do that, you gotta meet the people that have done it at the highest level for a very long time. Also, I want to say a comedian's favorite, a brilliant writer, and just forever towards me, he's always been a good guy. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to say I have David Tell on Gold Mines today. What's going on with you, Dave?
Thanks for having me on the show, Kevin. And I don't know if you do that for every guest, but I appreciate the three aw shits. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. Much respect back at you for that. And dude, I got to tell you, it's been a while, but I always feel every time I do connect with you, it's like, I don't know, it just makes me feel good. So thanks for having me.
Man, I want to say the same. You know, Dave, like a legend, an icon, and I don't say that lightly, man. You know, you really are. You're someone that has done. You are. You. I know you don't want to hear it. I know you don't like to, you know, to receive that. It's not your thing at all. But it's the truth. You're somebody that's operated on a very high level under this comedy umbrella. I mean, right now, Dave, you're on what? How many years do you have in?
37. And it's funny how you said, it's funny how you said a comics comic and how that used to be a big deal. Now you have to be a comics comic. You got to go one more level to actually get some play on it. But I think we're the only group that does that. I think like you never hear a plumber's plumber or a barber's barber. You don't hear anything like that. So anyway, I appreciate it.
No, you don't hear it. You don't hear it from other, from other. You know,
From other, that guy can cut hair.
Yeah. It's not the same level of synergy, and I can understand that. But a comedy, it definitely is. You know, Dave, you said 37 years.
Yeah,
it's a long time. It's a long time, man. And in 37 years to still have the want, the wherewithal to reinvent, to come up with the new. I want to start off by just saying, where is it that you pull the energy? Where is it that you pull the love from for you at this point in your career to still stay with it, to still do it at the level that you're doing it at?
I think at this point, I think you'll agree with me. It's like, I don't even remember my life before comedy. You know, I had like many jobs and like did all that, but now it's like comedy, and pretty much everybody I know now is either in the comedy world. So it is kind of my life. And to be honest, sometimes I get up every day and I go, "Why am I doing it?" And I guess it's still the love of the unknown, like coming up with the new material, seeing how it goes in front of a crowd, and like being able to deliver like that, and how even though we live in these times where it's very difficult with jokes, how jokes have like a life of their own and there's so much put on a joke, still coming up with a joke, a new idea, bring it to the stage. And especially when something just happens, like just like on stage, you say something and you realize, wow, that's, I never thought of that. And it just happened right now. And the crowd reacted to me. That is better than anything. And, I'm sure like in other worlds, like I guess surfers, the perfect wave, they say, I don't know if you're a surf. Do you surf, Kevin?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do surf, actually.
You do? Okay. So
I do surf.
So you could tell
me
better.
It's going to sound crazy, but I do.
I, you know, like I'll look out on the ocean, then I'm like, I had enough. I got to go home. But for the surfer, I assume that's like the perfect wave, and you're like, man, I can't believe I caught it. So same thing in comedy. You know, when you nail it, when everything comes together, you're like, wow, this is why I do it.
This is Gold Mines, hosted by Kevin Hart.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now more from Kevin Hart on Gold Mines.
You know, when you talk about comedy, right, one thing that we don't talk about enough or highlight enough that I think is extremely important is, you know, the difference in style, the difference in technique. And, you know, Dave, this is a great opportunity for listeners that may not be aware, but that should be aware, is you have honed and so well defined what I would like to call a technique, right? And when I think of the people that kind of share this space of technique, it's the unseen punchline. It's the approach to the sporadic story or storytelling that's done through this lens that you see through, and it's like a pulse. Like if you see the heartbeat and you go to the hospital, this thing goes up and down. But the level of up and down that you present in your comedy style is one of comfort, discomfort, shock, and it's such a great ride to be on. At what point did you realize that you were kind of like operating in your own space, like that this style of comedy was something that you had honed in and that was very specific to you?
Wow, that's a really good. I'm thinking about it because I think a lot of young comics, they come up to you because I'm like the old man, you know. They'll come up to you and go like, "Do you think persona and style are more important than material?" And I always go, you know, the most important thing in comedy is to be consistent. Like I have to say, I put you in the small group of very talented, gifted people, both in comedy and so many other mediums. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, mm-hmm. I saw that when I first met you. I'm like, this guy is different. This guy's special. This guy's the complete package. And there's a few people like that, but I'm not one of them. I'm a, whatchamacallit, a utility player. I believe in like grinding it out. And it took me a long time to like feel comfortable on stage and then to also be consistent. And I think consistent doesn't get enough attention in the world of comedy, mm-hmm. and just the world at large, that people who can deliver and deliver again in any situation. You know what I'm talking about? Good crowd, bad crowd, off night, you know, weekend. Those people deserve some props, because once you are consistent, that's when everything else explodes. That's when you can go like, now I know I can get them back, so now I'm going to push it. Or now I know this is going to work, so now I can go in a different direction and see if it'll work, you know, somewhere else, or I can jump into the crowd and jump back into my material. So once you have that consistent thing going, then anything's possible. Before that, it's really just luck. You know, you're like flipping coins every minute up there.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, you're trying to figure it out before that, right? Like, like to your point, it's like, okay, shit. Well, let me throw what I can at it and see what sticks. The discovery of what works is the fun part, because then once you realize what works, you're like, okay, well, this is where I'm going to focus, and this is what I'm going to try to perfect. And as you do perfect it or get to a place of perfection for yourself, you start to expand and grow, where the consistency that you just discussed is what then becomes the next focus. your consistency, I mean, is within the record. It's within the resume. And it's not about having the first good hour or the second good hour. It's about understanding that at any point in time, you can prioritize redefining, redeveloping, and coming up with the new. I think that's something that I was able to learn early from watching how the elite or higher, I'll just say the higher ups, the comedians in New York when I started, that really embraced the stage, but embraced the process of work. And it was always working on new material, defining this, defining that, making this, improving that, to always have something else to present. For you, when did you grasp that concept of the work attached to the craft and not just the craft and just being the comic that's going to, all right, here's my set, I'm just going to do this set forever? When did you embrace the renewing of the work?
That's a great thing to talk about. I think especially for today's generation of TikToking and all that, is that first of all, I was never good at anything, sports, school. So the whole idea of defeat was not new to me. So comedy is perfect. Doing those open mics, you know, no laughs, being heckled, that kind of felt right to me. You know, I don't know if that's because I grew up in that kind of home, but it kind of made me feel like, yeah, I can deal with this. But I would say that the funny thing about it is that once I realized that, you know, I'm going to be doing this, I went all in on it. And I didn't commit to being a comic till I probably was almost 30 years old. Like, I had day jobs and I was like, okay, I'll give it 2 more years and then I'll join the Navy, or like, I'll give it another year. And then, like, I don't know. You know, maybe I can, you know, move cross country and like get a job like sanitation. I didn't know what I was going to do because it really was bleak for a long time. Like, I did not make money at it for at least the first 7 years. And it really wasn't until I did Letterman, which you and I both know that was an iconic moment when you get to do a late night talk show. And like, mm-hmm. not only do your family see it, but the world sees it. And you're like, wow, I guess I made it now. I'm actually in show business. Before that, I was an open micer. You know, I was a guy who worked mm-hmm. a couple of weekends here and there. But once I did that, I realized, okay, I'm all in now. But I would say that I dug the fact that like you could do the work and you can get better. And like, there are definitely periods, we both know, highs and lows, where like, you're not getting any better. And you're like, whoa, what is this about? And that is the most mentally, it's like a psych-op on yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here? Why am I'm putting the work in, it's not getting better. You have to power through that, you know?
I like the breakdown, man. And like, this is where the conversations in comedy get so good to me. Because you know, you start to like, you start to understand the process that's attached to the engine for so many. And, you know, hearing you talk and say, look, man, I wasn't good at anything, or I didn't feel like I was good at anything. And then this is something where I actually grabbed, it was like, oh shit, like I can not only figure this out and be good at it, but I'm willing to go through the stages. And your moments of doubt could have presented like hard moments of doubt or hurdles that, you know, objectively took time to get past.
Sure.
But as comics, like when we do get to that bridge of decision, of is this what I'm going to dedicate my entire life to, or is this what I'm going to fucking quit and walk away from and find something else?
Exactly.
I would love to know, for you and knowing you, because I know you've had your share of ups and downs, what was the bridge, that moment in bridge of like making the real decision of dedication to comedy and not making the decision to walk away from it? Like, was that door ever presented in one like where you really had to sit and kind of like have the hard time of, Dave, if you're going to do it, let's do it to the best of our ability and not half-ass it anymore. Or Dave, like, we're not going to quit. We're not going to like have a lackadaisical mindset towards it. It's all or nothing.
Well, I guess for me, and for the people who don't, you know, and I know your fans are like comedy fans, I'm a club comic. That's how I started. That's what I do. I feel like you are a man who can do multiple venues and feel comfortable in any situation. For me, I feel like the club scene is really where like what I do pops, or at least where it seems to fit. And I would say that like for me, there was a couple of milestones. First of all was like passing at a club like the Comedy Cellar. That was a big deal. Mm-hmm. or working a weekend where you're like, wow, I'm working on a weekend here. And then it was, like I said, a Letterman and then working the road. So that's kind of like how it worked. And this is before TikTok and all those different things. So in between all of those things were a million terrible sets, a million horrible moments, a million, you know, jokes that just didn't hit. And that was kind of like the best of that. So when you do your first album, you know, or your first thing, and you're like, that's the best of the early years. That is like, you know, kind of encapsulates the beginning, the new comic, the guy who, you know, is now ready to kind of go on to the next thing, wherever that leads them. But for me, I worked the door at the original Improv in New York, and this is the late 80s. This is the comedy bust. It's not like now where like it's crazy and like everything is comedy and, you know, people can't get enough comedy. It was rooms full of 10, 12 people who I guess were tourists. They're wandering around in Times Square in New York. It's gritty. It's dirty. And the comics would go up and every one of them was waiting on a sitcom. They all would go up there, do their act. They wouldn't change a line. They wouldn't change a word. And I was the door guy. And I said, if I ever get that kind of stage time, I'm always going to bring something new to the stage. I'm always going to like try something new, even if it's like holding the microphone in a different hand, just something.
Wow.
So I don't become this kind of like automaton, this robot, you know,
the robot.
And I would say, and I would say that I was kind of on the next generation of comedies, the 90 comics, the 90s people. And here's my question for you, because you came from Philly, which was a totally different comedy scene than New York. And New York, Philly, Boston, on the East Coast, those were the big scenes. Atlanta now is huge. But before that, it was really those three. And since you're a guy who started in Philly, what did you think when you finally came to New York? Was it a big deal? Was it like one of those where like, hey, this is easy? I mean, what did you think of the crowd?
I was mind-blowing by the melting pot of variety, right? Like it was in Philadelphia, and this is no disrespect to any comic that was coming out at the time, but I was being groomed to be or become a very culture-specific talent. In other words, all of my jokes were driven towards the idea of being Black, where I come from and what I'm doing, and have you ever heard? Have you ever seen Black people do, and we did, like that's where I was going down. It wasn't until I got to New York that I was forced, because of the audience and the, you know, the multicultural vision of people. Like that's, it's so many different people. I can't just be specific to one group. I got to figure out a way to talk to all. And I was blown away by how every comic had a different approach to doing it, but we're getting laughs. And every comic left the stage, the good ones at least, where people knew their names and knew something about them. And I realized, like, I'm not talking about shit. I'm not talking about anything that's going to make people remember me. What is my thing? What's my introduction to my name? What's the personality trait that I want people to take away? And that was the biggest eye-opening factor to where I realized the difference between, you know, comics, comedians, funny people. There's a difference. There's a different approach to it. And headliners, what makes a headliner, why an opener is an opener, a feature to be, like, I started to see all of those things. And, you know, I can say, here's the biggest thing, Dave, and it actually segues to my next question. The comedians, they didn't just have the job of being a comedian. Like some were writers, some were comics, some were hosts, some were radio personalities. Like everybody was figuring out ways to mix the craft. And early on, I know that you were mixing your craft as well. You shared a stint where you were writing on SNL for a while. What was that for you? Like, was that too much of a thing for you? Did you love it? Did you not like it? What was your experience with the SNL style?
Well, that's cool, because back in that time, I think, which is so not true now, which is that if you were ugly like I am, you were a writer. If you were good looking, you were an actor. So it was really easy for them to go like, okay, you're an actor, you're a writer, you're an actor. You know, I don't know what we're going to do with you. You can hand out flyers or something. But I would say that like the SNL writing thing probably was like not timed well, because I never wanted to be a sketch writer. I wanted to be a joke writer for myself. I wanted to be Bill Hicks. I wanted to be Richard Pryor. I wanted to be Sam Kinison. I wanted to be like a power road headliner. That was my dream at that point. And that the SNL came along. And to be honest, like you know, I've always been really lucky with like the comics who I know. Like I knew Jon Stewart and I knew all these guys who were great comics. And of course, now icons like yourself in the comedy world, if not the world at large. And, you know, they had shows and I would write for them and how fun it was to write for other comics. But SNL is this legacy show and it's got like a lot of, you know, there was politics involved and cliques and all that. But at the end of the day, I can't blame the show. I blame myself. Part of my head was into doing the job. The other part was like, I want to be a comic. You know, I want to be out on the road. I want to be, you know, I want to be like killing it, you know? So sitting in an office all day thinking of like, you know, sketches about going to a coffee shop, that was not really my thing, but it was a great opportunity. I don't think I made the most of it. So that's a question that I think we all have to look in our head and go like, you know, any opportunity, you really got to make the most of it. And I would say on that one, I failed. I didn't. And I couldn't wait to get out of there. I was like, oh, get me out on the road. And I had other writing jobs along the way. But to be honest, it was like writing my own stuff. Once you're used to doing that, it's so hard to give material to other people. And, you know, I guess that's where I am now, you know, in a hotel.
But it's the experience. it's the experience. Like you said, it's an experience that you look back at and you can look at the pros and cons of the experience. But the reason why I don't think that you didn't make the best out of it, because that experience is attached to television, which of course you ended up participating in. I mean, you go to Insomniac, which is a show that ran for, you know, it had a nice stint. And this is something that came from the creative mind of yourself. How was that sparked? How did you come with the idea for Insomniac?
Well, you'll love this because, you know, that was one of those ideas where like Comedy Central at the time was really, it was the place to be if you were a comic. And, you know, I would say there's a lot of people who Comedy Central was a really important part in them becoming household names and going on to bigger and better things. And for me, it's like, I know I was good on my feet and it was my idea of like what happens late at night. I'm a late night guy. So, you know, at the time, you know, a lot of drinking, all that kind of stuff. But I wanted to be different than the Girls on Wild thing or any of that kind of stuff. I wanted to like show late night jobs and like really kind of highlight these towns that not many people go to, like, you know, the small towns, like the towns that don't get a big, you know, no Miamis or, you know, LAs or, you know, just like the off the wall towns, you know, the ones that we have to play as comics. So that was kind of the whole idea of it. And the funny thing about it is, since that is my biggest credit, I mean, to this day, people come up to me and like, oh, you know, I love watching you when I was, you know, I was like in junior high and all that kind of stuff. I remember once that ended and I was the one who was like, it was really a tough situation doing it, you know, a lot of nights, a lot of drinking, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, my crowd was so young that when I toured, I'm like, why isn't this place sold out? Everyone says they love the show. And it's like, they were still too young to go out. They were like young kids watching at home on a weekend because they weren't old enough to go out. So it was kind of interesting to see how, like, you know, where are the fans? They say they like it, but where are they? So it took a while for that to kind of kick in and become like really help me sell tickets. But yeah, TV.
Yeah.
I would say the one thing that I was going to say towards the end is that any show that I've ever done for money was a failure. Like, there's a lot of examples of things that are like, hey, come on, you do it. It's a nice payday. I mean, what's going to happen? It always never works. You got to be passionate about it. I was very passionate about it. I work with great people on the show. So anything where, like, you are all invested in it usually has a better shot than when it's just like, hey, it's a check, you know? Would you agree or
you know,
no?
You know what's crazy? It's like you really like crack the code. And by crack the code, I'm saying like when you realize that doing the things you love will ultimately put you in the best possible positions for success, that's when the light bulb really goes off. And chasing the money sometimes puts you in positions where you're not going to be happy, but the money can be, you know, substantial. It's more about showing up every day and being excited about the thing that you're going to do. And your show, Insomniac, what I love the most about it is it highlighted the life of the rogue comedian that you are. And ultimately, when you're trying to sell tickets, you kind of created this ecosystem of this is going to help this machine. I love this machine. I love to do this thing. This is going to make this even better for me. So 1 + 1 is going to equal 5 in the long run. And it ended up doing that. And I mean, look, along the way, I can go to so much. I can go to so many things that you've done that had like a significant impact. And as a fan, of course, that I'm just aware of. I want to go to your HBO special for a minute,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is like, of course, after you got into business, like you're, I don't know. I want to say like you were between 8 to 10 years in when this came out.
I'm trying to think. I'm sure it was a little longer than that, like in terms of things. But what a dream to do HBO. And I have to say, I don't think, once again, I had enough material. And I remember talking to my manager at the time. He's like, the waves of laughter will help you get through it. And like, you know, the crowd is there. But it turned out it was a crowd that was brought in. I think they were wrangled off the street. I don't know what they were like, you know, come see a comedy show, get a free, you know, drink or something. And I could tell they weren't necessarily my crowd. And there was another comic who was on with me, and we both kind of shared the crowd because I think they were kind of, you know, like they were doubling up to shoot them. And I was like, yeah, this doesn't seem like they're really into the show here. And you could tell like on that one that it's an uphill swim. You know what I'm saying? Where like, you know, you're doing your job and they're like kind of a step behind you. And you're like, oh, man, I can't believe it. This is my big shot. But it was really a pump to get on HBO. You're like, this is it. This is where Carlin, you know, made his name on HBO. So I would say that at the end of the day, I give myself a B, maybe a C plus on that one.
But really?
Hey, yeah. Now I'm pretty like pretty hard on my
hard
material
on yourself.
And myself.
Yes, you're very hard on yourself. Very, very hard on yourself. And I don't knock that, right? I'm a person that believes in, you know, the idea of pushing yourself to the max and, you know, knowing of course what you're capable of and always expecting more, but you can't overlook the astronomical levels of success that you have and that you've achieved, and
well,
and
you're being
the
way
return of
too
energy.
Good to me, Kevin. I have a lot of things I want to say about you that I think that
but it's the truth.
Know. Here's it's something the, I think. Okay, well, thank you. But here's the things. I'm really terrible with the comment, but here's the thing that I think you. There's very few people who can actually tell a story and really make it come alive and make it funny. And like on my last thing that I just did, the Hot Cross Buns, I'm like, you know, there's all these great storytellers, right? But sometimes the story is not funny. And then at the end, they'll be like a little titter and they'll think that's material. You and me both know that's like a long story. Yours is funny all the way through, consistently funny all the way through. Characters. I mean, like, that's what it's about. You bring the energy to it. And a lot of these people feel like if they just tell exactly what happened to them, people will realize how funny it was when it happened. I'm like, no, that's being a terrible storyteller. That's like a guy you move away from. If you're at a party, you're like, hey, I think I got to go over and find where my coat is, you know? So I'm saying, like, that's a skill set that I wish I have. I'm not a great storyteller. But what I try and do, since my jokes are so short, is connect them in a way like a chunk of material and also kind of tell a story through it, which is another way of telling a story. It's not necessarily a truthful story, but it is a funny bit. And like what I like about you is like your stuff is really happy. It's truthful. And it's like you found the funny in it. So that's props to you on that, because that's not everybody can do that. And I think everybody thinks they can do that, but they can't.
It's, you know what it's I'm saying? A talent that I've tried my best to hone in on and perfect. You know, it's the story with multiple punchlines, the story with the beginning and men and a punchline. But it's not just about the ending to the story. It's the punchlines in the middle of the story that give the story life, that gives you a purpose of listening and fulfillment, and then attaching it to the other stories at different points throughout the set. You know, your callbacks and tying it in. So ultimately, through a set, I'm telling 15 stories, but those 15 stories are embedded inside one overarching story. And at the end, somehow they all tie in together to where you've listened to an hour plus of material and it's a journey. And you're like, oh my God, like I was with him the whole way and I don't realize how much time has went past and doing it. So I appreciate you, man. And I love you for saying that. And since we're sharing that, I think the audience should know, like, what me and Dave, our origin story is. So Dave Attell, you know, in my earlier years of stand-up comedy, you know, I'm in New York. I'm a newer comic. I have Keith Robinson as a very, very close friend and mentor of mine. And my introduction, you know, to the comics that are there, that have been around, their handshakes and hellos. And this is my hangout stage and I want to get in. At the period of time, I got into the Comedy Cellar, and this is one of the most elite comedy clubs in New York. So, of course, it's a big feeling. It's a big deal to me. I like that. I feel like I got a badge of honor by being embedded into this system. And at the performing there, and get in the rhythm, one day Dave Attell catches me perform. And after catching me perform, I'm outside and Dave says to me, in just a very like matter of fact way, man, I caught your set. You're very funny. Ask me a couple questions. And he said, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to call this guy, right? And when you call this guy, you're going to tell him that I told you to call. But I want him to like see you. He's one of the biggest managers in the country. But dude, you're funny. He has to see you. And Dave went and called that manager, told him like to expect a call from me. I told Keith immediately what Dave Attell told me and told him the name. And Keith goes, Dave Becky, oh my God, it's one of the biggest managers. You absolutely have to call. And in calling, Dave took my call and made time to come see me perform. And after coming to see me perform, Dave said he wanted to manage me. And granted, this was after I was with Barry Katz, who wasn't the best manager for me. Not to say that he wasn't a good manager to some, but for me, there wasn't a good fit between Barry and I. And we ended up going our separate ways. And not in any bad way, just like in a, you know, I'm going to figure something else out. And he said, as you should, and wish me the best. And that figuring something out became Dave Becky. And Dave Becky was a little more catering and a little more nurturing to like information and guidance as to what I should do and how I should approach it and what I should keep working on. And the rest becomes history. And yeah, the dope thing about this story for me is you take away just the genuine side to our business. And the genuine side is comics just simply loving comedy. Sometimes we forget that. Like, that's what it's about. Like, being a comic and seeing somebody going, oh man, that's funny, or that person's funny, and not being threatened and being okay with just simply giving a suggestion that could help someone.
More Gold Mines with Kevin Hart after this.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo,
the hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Now back to Gold Mines with host Kevin Hart.
When I saw you perform, that was the first time I ever saw you perform. And, you know, I guess what really got me was just how, like, after you did your set, and these are small sets, I was still smiling and thinking. And I was like, this guy has that like, whatever that is, that magic, that thing. And I was like, man, my manager's got to see this guy. And I'm really glad that worked out. But you would have made, honestly, there would have been no stopping you, whatever. But Dave is a good dude. He really loves comedy, and he really tries to do the best for all of us at the time. And I would say that, you know, it's rare that you see a guy on stage or a person or whoever where you're like, okay, they are totally formed. You know, especially in the club world, everyone's like working on stuff, but he's like, they're totally formed and they have like the ability to like wrap a crowd. You know what I'm saying? Like the crowd, like you could have gone on for hours and they would have just dug what you're doing. And I'm like, you know, that's another level. And that's why like it really hit me when I saw you. And it's happened to me a couple times. Like I remember seeing Chappelle when he was 15 in Baltimore go on stage. And I was like, oh, wow, this guy is great. Look at this guy. Look how confident he is. Like, look how, like, he's so in his zone. He's not, you know, back in the day, especially even to this day, there's a lot of like, oh, it's a drunk crowd, so you do this kind of act, mm-hmm. or hey, I got to handle this. No, he was doing what he wanted to do. He had material he wanted to talk about. And, you know, the crowd, you know, got it. Or if there was some that didn't, you know, it didn't faze him. To be that young and able to like deal with that kind of situation, it blew me away. And I was like, this is another guy. This guy is gifted, you know. And to this day, like I like to think I have a great eye for comedy. But it's not about, I think the thing that you didn't say, which needs to be said, is that it's a very self-centered world. Everyone, like we all know a lot of people where it's like, you know, hey, it's about me all the time. And you know, I'm not going to help anybody else. To me, I feel like I'm part of a group. And like, you know, I want the best comics to make it, because that makes the rest of us look good. So that's mm-hmm. how I see it. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, you being as good as you are really ups the raises the bar for the rest of us. And it, hopefully will the fans will follow to all of us. So, you know.
Man, I can't.
I don't
can't
even know what that was. Is that a rhyme or something? I don't know.
No, it was good. It was very vague. A great wrap up.
Anyway,
I cannot thank you enough. Just for the moment, right? For the moment, for the gesture, it truly does mean the world. And you know, I think it's something that just people need to know about, because when people understand that it's okay. To mm-hmm. actually admire, to love, to support. It has nothing to do with you, your talent. It has nothing to do with your road of opportunity. It actually just has to do with the foundation, fraternity, this business that we all love in entertainment and comedy. We're always trying to elevate it. And the more doors that get opened up, the more opportunities for so many. After you, opportunities for after them, for after those, it just continues. And you are just an example of what that is and what should be. I truly do.
Thank you, man. Thank you, dude. I mean, these are all, you know, I wish I could take a compliment better, but thank you. And I would say that for the younger comics or whatever, I feel like they have it. It's never been harder and it's never been easier. You know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. if you really are a self-starter and you, want to do this, like, you can get to an audience quicker than you ever would back in the day when we started. You know, like, you can put out your tapes, you can put up a channel, you can do all these different things. But the actual development of comedy, I don't think you can, like, do it any other way. I mean, I feel like you really have to put in the reps. You got to listen to your own tape, those horrible tapes where, like, you just want to throw it out the window. And then you got to kind of move forward and, like, learn the, I guess, like, learn the ropes, like they say. You know, like, you got to kind of figure out how you do it, and then what you're doing, and then how you want it to be seen, you know? So, sure, there's a lot of tech that can help you, you know, AI or whatever, but at the end of the day, I think it's classic, you know? You got to do it like the way we did it, you know?
I think you're so generous with information, and, you know, to this generation of the younger comic, it's just good for them to have the resources of just personnel for information when and where they can. Once again, you haven't stopped. And I say congrats on your Netflix special.
Thank you.
When we were off before we had started, man. But I definitely want the listeners to go check it out, man. You know, this is a guy, once again, who still finds the fun and the funny. He still finds the reason to create and keep creating. And this special is a definition of that. So I want you guys to make sure that you go check out his special. We're not done yet, but I'm just shouting out this special because we're riding off of great comedy conversation. It's called Hot Cross Buns, right? And I want to ask you about the title. Of course, I watched the special. I loved the special. I laughed at the special. Hot Cross Buns. Just give me the explanation behind the title of the special, Dave.
That's a good conversation, because, you know, I've worked with Netflix before. You know, I did Bumping Mics with Jeff Ross, who's a buddy of mine.
Bumping
we
Mics.
Had a lot of fun doing that. And, like, you know, it's really weird how they have all this data now on titles and, like, what you know, like, what jokes work where. You know, it's kind of like kind of creepy, but it's amazing that they have all this data. So I wanted to call it a tell. You know, that's what the director of my special, Scott Gallick, great guy, you know, talk about passionate. This guy was with me for months and months editing. And I'd say that, you know, we're like, a tell. Okay, I don't care. That sounds good. And then they're like, well, you know what? It doesn't really capture the thing and blah, blah, blah. Then I'm like, okay, well, I play the recorder in it, and the song that we play is Hot Cross Buns. So I'm like, we'll call it that. And everybody was like, you like it? And I was like, it's not too corny. Because I immediately think everything I'm doing is hack and corny. Do you ever get like, I'm like, well, that can't be, it's too easy. It can't be right, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what we call it.
Sometimes you get hard on yourself. Yes. Being hard on yourself. I get that.
I'm totally so much self-doubt. I'm like, okay, Hot Cross Buns, that's what we'll call it. And, like, we, you know, Googled it. And, of course, there's a lot of, you know, other sites with buns in it and hot and all that kind of stuff. But people seem to get it. And, you know, what can I tell you? It seems to have caught on. And the one thing I will say about that special is, like, I threw a lot of things at it. And it was also another post-pandemic special. You know what I'm talking about? Where, like, talking about the pandemic, that's kind of out. You know, people are sick of it. They're out now. That's, like, you know, whatever. And then, you know, politics, people don't want to hear about that, of course. And luckily, I'm not a political guy, but I would say that, like, I had enough jokes in there, and I wanted to, like, jokes per minute. You know, I wanted to keep it going, keep it fast. So I just didn't want a long special. That's what I said. I go, no one has the attention span now to watch an hour. So 37 minutes, 35 minutes, something like that would be perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. And Earthquake did an awesome half like that. I was like, man, this is awesome to see. It really made me feel good to see the guy rock it out like that and keep it tight. Mm-hmm. And I wanted the same, but I realized now, you know, it's got to be a certain length in order for them to register on their algorithms and all these different things. So, you know, at the end of the day, I didn't want to give any more than I thought the audience can handle, you know?
That makes sense. It makes sense. I mean, look, I think it was very, by the way, it was tight. And, you know, it was one of those things where you're pacing, the pacing, the joke pacing, everything. It just works. So to our listeners, man, please make sure you guys go check it out. Very, very funny special it is. He just doesn't disappoint. Dave, you said you're a comic. You said you're a club comic, right? And that's what you love to do.
That's what
I
am.
Love the role. You're happy there. What's next for you? Are there any other... you know, like, is there any other goals within the space of comedy that you want to get to, that you want to achieve, anything that you're looking to do?
Well, I'm not an actor. Like, I consider you a really good actor. So I'm not a good actor.
Thank you, man.
Occasionally I do acting. And I was going to ask you this. So, like, you know, it's usually with friends. Like, Amy Schumer is so good to me. And, like, you know, I've done, like, parts on Pete Davidson stuff and Michael Che. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, really cool people. But the best part about it is they always let me do what I do. It's like learning lines. That's not my thing. I like to, like, you tell me what you kind of want and I'll riff something and then you can edit, you know, that's what I like. And I know that's not, I respect the craft of acting. That's why I say I am not an actor. Okay. And the real actors, I totally get it. But for me, how do you handle the hanging around all day? Like, that really is the thing. Like, as comics, we used to move it around. Like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to, like, the show's at 8, so I'm going to go do this. And now you're kind of like, and I know the regular people would be like, oh, sitting in a trailer all day. Oh, what is that? Blah, blah, blah. But to be honest, it really does weigh on your head, doesn't it? I mean, you've done this a million times now, so how do you do it?
The you try your best. I mean, I wear so many hats there, so I'm busy in the days, and
yeah,
you know,
that's true. Yeah,
there's a bigger demand on my time, but I do understand what you're saying. It is a hurry up and wait business. It's not a hurry up and hurry. It's literally going and saying, all right, well, we got to do X, Y, and Z. Let's get these people in this early so we know they're here, and we're not waiting on people if and when we get to them. We want to make sure that we can do everything that we need to do in the timelines that we need to do them in.
I get
what you're saying, though, because I'm right there with you on the side of, you know, you want to just be active. Where we come from a schedule that is back to back to back to back to back, right? Nonstop. So
I am spoiled. Like, you get to go on stage, you do whatever you want to do there. You know, you get to create, do all that kind of stuff. And then you're like, you basically get to do it again the next day. Actors, this is their moment. This is like, this could be the thing they do all year. So they are like ready and all that kind of stuff. And part of me is like, you know, I feel like I'm in the way or something. I'm like, you know, dude, I get this. This is your thing here, you know? So I was just saying, like, you know, for them, I guess the process, even the extras, they're excited, you know, the makeup and get their hair done. They have to wear a sweater, you know, whatever they got to do. So I'm like, you know, for me, I'm like, all right, so you think we can leave early? Like, anyway, like, you know, I mean, I got a lot of lines. You can put down to one and maybe I can run out and, you know, you'll need
condense
me.
It.
I'm always
condense
trying to get out of the movie. But, you know, hey, these are good problems to have. Am I right, my friend?
They're astronomically great problems to have. Great, great problems. I want to say this to you, right? I mean, as we're going down the checklist and we're talking about just what you want, where you are, you mentioned comics that, you know, you admired in the beginning. And I love to ask people just like, what is there, if you could just group it together, right? If you could group it together and give me your top four or top five, who are those that check the box for you as your fan favorites in stand-up comedy?
Well, there's the icons, the because I'd like to do it in two groups, if I may have that that pleasure of there were the icons that I never really met, although I did meet Bill Hicks, and that really was like a big moment for me when you get to meet a guy that you kind of like worship, like fanboy all over him, and I did, and Sam Kinison and Rich Pryor, and of course George Carlin. Those are the ones pretty much everyone says, and those are the icons. But the working comics, the comics that I kind of did get to meet and did have a big influence on me. It's a huge list, but I'll put it down to like five or six. And one of them would be Colin Quinn, who was such a good dude, smart, funny. You know, he combined everything that I wanted. Like, it was just so how quick and funny and how well thought out he was. He really brought like a thing. And Alan Havey, who was another big New York comic, and just how he was able to handle a crowd and all that kind of stuff. And then Richard Jenny, who probably, I don't know, this is a generational thing. At one point, Richard Jenny, who is no longer with us, was like, I worked on the Caroline's Comedy Hour, and I was a writer, and he would do his act, and just like seeing him live, like this guy could blow anyone off the stage, and he could do multiple hours of material, and he could take one small topic and like just expand it out into like a 15-minute chunk. And like the crowd would, you know how they always say, oh, the crowd, my sides are hurting. These people were like medevaced out of the club. They were that blown away. It was exhaustion. Like for some reason, the temperature went up 10 degrees in there just from like laughter. So this guy to this day is like what I consider like a power act. And then okay. There's my own contemporaries, and a lot of them are not with us. Mitch Hedberg and Greg Giraldo and Patrice. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Doug Stanhope, who is my favorite comic. And that's because, you know, I know him. He's a buddy. And I always felt like, you know, he really walks the walk. You know, a lot of guys talk, hey, I drink. And blah, blah, blah. He really does it. And there's no one like him. And he immediately said, I'm going to do my own thing. So to this day, Doug Stanhope is the guy that I always call up and go, do you think this is hacked? Do you think this is corny? And he'll like talk me off the ledge. So that's my list. There's more and more names. So many great ones out there.
That's a great list. That's a great list.
Thank you.
A great list. And shout out to those that of course were missing.
Are no longer with us. Yeah.
Yes, you mentioned Patrice. I mean, you're talking about just like once again, icons, people that the legends don't die. So, you know, I love that they live on through the stories of so many comics, right? Like we never forget. And that's a dope thing. I love that you mentioned them.
Thank you.
Dave.
Yes.
Dave, I got to tell you, man, talking comedy is something that I can do all day. Talking comedy with you has been exactly what I wanted it to be, which is not only informative, but just expressive, passionate. It's what you love, and it's clear in the way that you talk about it, man. And I'm mad that it took us so long to do this, but I'm also happy that it happened. When it happened, because everything happens when it's supposed to. It happens when the times is right. And I know I've told you before, and I've said thank you. And, you know, I tell you like that moment, what it's done, what it's meant. And I'm glad I got to say it here so fans can hear it. But I love that you are a true representation of just the thing that we all work so hard at. You are a person that embraces every single step that the comedy journey takes you on. And, you know, your fan base that you've built over the world or the years, they're devoted fans, they're loyal fans. And for you to have 37 years underneath your belt attached to laughter is insane. Insane. Well,
let me ask you a question. So you're also, you and I have been fighting the fight for decades now. Do you see an end to it, or do you see like, you know what, I'm just going to keep going and going and going? Because part of me is like, 40, get out, you know, like whatever happens at 40, get out. The other part of me is like, I never want to stop doing comedy. I might want to stop doing the road and the flights and the hotels and all that kind of stuff, but I never want to stop doing comedy. But, you know, I don't think I've been relevant since, I don't know, I don't even know when I was relevant. Maybe it was like five Fast and Furious ago or something. Like, I'm not relevant, you know, and I don't care about that. But I'm just saying, like, it's really hard to, like, you know, like with these younger and younger audiences, you look at them and you go like, we have nothing. I can't do this. So, you know, I would like to say I'm going to keep doing it. But how about you? Do you feel like, you know what?
There's an end to this. I think for a fact, like, there is. Everything, of course, has a punctuation. And the end for me is not like stopping or retiring from it. It's, to your point earlier, it's just the schedule, the wear and tear. But walking away from the actual craft, I have too much fun doing it. I have too much fun making people laugh. And, you know, I'm not going to stop the things that bring me joy in life. Like, we're living to be happy. So you got to keep your happy checks around you. You got to keep them green. And comedy is that. So unless it went dark, which I never see happening, I don't ever see it ending. And, you know, being home and popping up on stages once in a while, that's you still keeping the green check on. So that's my take on it. It's just I'm in love with it. I'm in love with what it represents, and I'm in love with the reaction that it gives, and I love how it makes me feel. So the other layers to it, you know, of course you can lessen and walk away from, because there's so many, but the microphone in hand and telling a joke is one that I think I hold on to for quite some time.
I kind of see it the same way. You know, but thank you so much for having me, man. I mean, this is fun.
Man,
it's always great to see you. So, you know, to the fans, thanks for supporting not only us, but just comedy in general. And, you know, comics are built by great audiences. So I've been very lucky to work clubs and all these different places where the audience just love comedy, not a specific person, just the idea of comedy. And I always ask them after the show who your other comics are, and they say Kevin, they say all these different names, and I'm like, that means you're a comedy fan, you're not just a fan of one person. And that's what we need, that's what builds comics. So, you know,
I love it, man. Ladies and gentlemen, you know what this is. This is Gold Mines. You know what we do here? We get inside the minds of amazing talent, amazing personnel. Today was no different. We got to talk to the legend Dave Attell, man. And guys, you get to walk away with an understanding of not only who he is, but his why. And that's the dope thing about this podcast. It's informative. It's great conversation. That's what it's about. I'm glad that we got to have it with you. Dave, I appreciate you, man. You have a good one.
Thank you, buddy.
All right.
Gold Mines with Kevin Hart is a SiriusXM and Laugh Out Loud radio production and executive produced by Kevin Hart, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, and Eric Weil. Produced by Danny Sellers and Leslie Guam. Engineered by Danny Sellers.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.